It's March 11th, 2014. It's about 7:30 in the evening. And I just wanted to grab a few notes. I've been considering how I'm going to approach the telling of the story. It's always been my intent to tell our story from my perspective, and I just, you know, I remember years ago when I was taking my walks and making some recordings. I remember at that time I had stated that if there was just one concept that I could help others to thoroughly and concisely understand what I was attempting to stand and point to, I guess would be the way to say it, that point, that concept would be the bridge function. And I remember from the notes from G. Spencer Brown, he talked about to make a statement meaningful, that you had to present the person that you're asking to consider a point of reference from which to consider the perspective that you're sharing. And that always, you know, that's how I came up with the concept of the bridge function. But the thing I was really struggling with, I hate to use that word, but the thing that I was really sort of just turning over, contemplating, was the many roles that I've kind of come up with and how to reconcile or how to order them, how to structure them and show the correlation, the relationship between them. And so the avatar and the troll, that's a pair that, you know, the avatar nature and the troll nature, and the active participant and the passive participant, and the initiate, apprentice, journeyman, and master, and the ace. Ace is related to avatar because it's avatar, champion, exemplar, which, you know, I talk about the wizard or the wiz, well, the wizard. And I found that the wizard tended to be gender neutral, which fits. You know, I would choose to use gender neutral labels or I was going to say tokens. I kind of forgot about that. You know, avatar. I thought about wizard, but the wizard was the comp. To me, it seemed like it was the combination of ace, the avatar, the champion, and the exemplar. The exemplar being as a beacon to others, shining as a guide. And there's the master again. That's I remember that was one of the meanings that I attributed to the term master. It's someone who has advanced in their craft, in the practice of their craft, to the point where they can guide others in their practice and their works. So I can kind of loosely see how some of this ties together, but I was trying to come back to a previous recording where I think I ended up naming the recording Through Tired Eyes. And I was talking about basically, I was kind of setting the stage of the old wizard. He's, let's see, how did I say it? The old man, and I guess I could say the old wizard, but the old man sat looking, staring. The old man sat looking at his notes through tired eyes. And, I was talking to Kyle a little bit about this earlier today, that it has to do with, to me, setting that stage has something, if not an immense amount, to do with the chain of custody. In other words, it's about not letting any advance in the master's craft die or perish with that current embodiment, with that current avatar. In other words, it's about disseminating and sharing any and all facets of the craft possible with others who are engaged in the quest, so that no part that has come to light and a participant, most especially a avatar who embodies, not allowing that to perish with them, by finding a way to record it, to share it, to structure it in such, to fix it in such a way that anyone else, either at present or in the future, so that they would have access to it, so it wouldn't perish with that particular person. And Kyle and I were kind of, talking about some of the beliefs that the Taoism, I think he said, and I'm not real clear on that, but about ego. And I was basically explaining my thoughts and insights about that in the chain of custody of the master's craft, a person who has become awakened, and I'm not saying there's a term he calls the Kundalini awakening. It's a very high level of what I would term exaltation, and I don't know that I've ever achieved that. I don't really know. But what I'm saying is that someone who has awakened, I think it's kind of like what I've I swear, I think I heard this once in an episode of The West Wing about leaving it all on the field. In other words, the ego becomes second to the understanding or the awareness that although we are temporal beings in this presence, in this incarnation, however, in this life, in the human condition, however you want to label that, or however one would wish to label that, there are although we're temporal, there are enduring truths, principles. I call them collectively enduring and endearing principles and practices. And that's the craft. It's the quest to master the art and science of crafting yourself and the world around you. And it is part of our inheritance, and it is part of our heritage. Now, how much it plays and influences the direction of our own personal lives is according to how much we come to value it and engage it and engage the quest of it and treasure it. And it's loyal to it. It's a devotion. So the quest of it. And then, of course, contingent first on that, and then secondly on how well we prepare for the eventuality of our own demise, and therefore find a way to pass on any initiate, the apprentice, and the journeyman, the way I referred to that was these individuals are working in the craft. But then the master, they reach a level of exaltation and of, they reach a level of exaltation where now, instead of just working in the practice, it doesn't end, but in addition to working in the practice, they also work on the practice because of their level of attainment, or the opposite said, that they've attuned the vessel, their presence, so that the conscious, the perfected consciousness, how can I say that? The fully awakened consciousness can come down into bodily form. That's sort of the Kundalini model, where it's about perfecting or preparing, let's say that that's probably a better word. It's about preparing the vessel, which is the human being, both material and, you know, the physical, the moral, the spiritual, the vessel, all the facets of the vessel, so that it's attuned vessel. That's harmonics. So that it's a cavity, a tuned cavity. So that's it's a vessel that this consciousness can descend in and take human form. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So, with that said, the long way around, the whole point is once an individual has reached that level of awareness, not only of the ego self-awareness, but also of the awareness of all of consciousness as a singularity. I mean, that's kind of how I term it. I don't know how others would speak to it, but see, that singularity has continuity. Although any specific individual vessel is temporal, the animating energy, that conscious will, is enduring. And as I was saying to Kyle, I think that's what the loosening of the bondage of the ego self, I really think that's, to me, that's sort of the crux of it. It's nothing to take away from the individualized self, the ego self. I mean, it is a part of the human condition, and I don't think it's something to be spurned. I think it's something to be embraced. But I think a fully awakened conscious being realizes there's something larger than their individual life. Not only in the sense that it animates them, it is inherent in them, in their individual expression of it. But it's larger than life, meaning it's larger than their life. And if I look at my larger model of what is the whole purpose of existence, of creation, of the universe as we view it from the human condition, I've said it's materialized consciousness. And so if that is the case, which I'm not going to try to convince someone that it is, but I suspect that it is, and if it is, then our specific condition that we call life in as a human being, this is, I can easily imagine that there would be many other manifestations of materialized consciousness, that we would be one example of perhaps an infinite number of ways that consciousness could become materialized and gain material expression. Now, with all that said, my question became, if this is just one example of many others, or if this is the expression that is currently vested, would I like this would I like this means, this manifestation to continue, to have continuity? One of the ways I considered that was from the perspective of an amusement park. You know, if this specific expression of consciousness through, creative expression, and that's what we now refer to as the human condition in the universe that the human exists in, if this is one of many, and I look at it like an amusement park, and I look at, you know, I kind of took a leap. I said, what if reincarnation is like someone on a ride at an amusement park, and you're standing in line, you know, waiting to get your turn, and you're right next to being in the line for the entrance, you're right next to the exit, and you see people running off and giggling and saying, wow, come on, let's go again. You know, they're coming around out of the exit and going right into the line for the entrance. Let's go again. Do it again. Let's do it again. The child's exclamation, it all leads back to kind of where I started. So, with that said, if that's the case, would I choose for this particular amusement park to have continuity, to continue to exist, so it becomes an option for me and others, myself and others, to ride this ride again. And excuse me, and the answer is yes. And so that's why I believe in all of this, when I was trying to identify my bookends. You see, I'm trying to come full circle to my perspective to share, our story to tell. When I was trying to frame the bookends of our story to tell, I kept bumping up against good and evil. And this is something that Kyle and I discussed today, that if, in fact, if in fact all that truly is a singularity, and everything is an expression of that singularity, then good and evil, the way we perceive it, are different aspects of the exact same source. That's where, it's kind of like Kurt Vonnegut said, when I was considering good and evil, it just didn't satisfy me. I just felt that there was something deeper, something more meaningful than just the concept of kind of like the black and white of, you know, something's good or something's bad, something's good or something's evil. And what I basically came to was, the bookends that I chose was sustainability versus extinction. Because to me, if I look at it from the perspective of materialized consciousness, and I look at it from the perspective of an amusement park or a carnival, and this is just such a place or a condition that the spirit can engage, that consciousness can engage and experience and experiment and observe. If I accept that, then what that kind of indicates to me is where if I frame it in that manner, and I value this option, then to me the greatest good that could be served by our presence is to find a way for this human condition to have continuity, to continue to exist. In other words, for it to be sustainable. Now, on the individual side, yes, you know, for people to live longer, healthier lives, all that's, you know, great. And of course, if I could choose to live a longer and healthier life, I would choose to do that. But more so, to drop away the ego self and recognize that it's about this existence having continuation. For the lack of a better term, for all souls to have this option to engage this adventure and misadventure. You know, this is the current, you know, adventure is the current circumstances. So the adventure, in other words, if this comes to naught, in other words, if humanity reaches the point of extinction, then this option's off the table. You know, that's, I don't know how else to kind of view that. I mean, it's hard being in the human condition
to approach that. It's hard to be outside your own skin and peer in. But that's what struck me about, you know, the sustainability versus extinction. I felt that the greatest good would be that we could find a way to reach a delicate balance, that's where the magic happens, of sustainability for the human race and for the socioeconomic system, that we could find that delicate balance between our needs and our wants, and satisfy the needs for everyone without doing harm to the vessel, the without doing harm to the host, so that the entire species could remain sustainable. Now, of course, the opposite of that is, I said, well, if that's the greatest good that can be served, then the greatest evil is that we move towards extinction. And from what I can see, I mean, there's many ways for the human race to go extinct. Some natural causes, like an asteroid colliding with the Earth and just wiping out all of humanity, wiping out the host in one fell swoop. And anything's possible. But I also recognize the distinct possibility of self-destruction. And I think that's the greatest challenge that we face as a species. And so this is where I believe the way it's going to shake out. I think this is where the avatar and troll nature is going to come into play. The avatar nature, I believe, the way I'm going to structure it, would work towards sustainability, would work, the point of the craft is for the magic to happen, for us to reach that delicate balance. Whereas the troll, I think it kind of goes back to what I used to say about when I used to run my dad's boat. The captain is responsible for his wake. And I think that's sort of where the avatar is always aware. And I even remember when I was thinking about the visual aid of at the tiller, of the master at the tiller, I had thought about where the avatar is looking ahead. That's the vision, that's the course corrections to attempt to steer a course true to that, to the magic, to that, to establishing and maintaining that delicate balance of for sustainability. At the same time, glancing backwards, being reflective, and taking into account the cost, their wake, you know, being responsible for I think the cost really says it, because it's about natural resources, it's about pollution, it's about not being, you know, kind of goes back to what I heard, and I think it was the Big Bang Theory, needy baby, greedy baby. You know, it's about the wisdom of satisfying our needs and limiting our wants, so that we don't overconsume, so that we leave something for the future. So, you know, again, that's to me, the troll never looks back. They don't care. You know, it's you know, that's, see, to me, I think, and this is where I think Kyle and I would like for him and I to talk about that a little further, because I think that's where the ego self, that selfishness, that selfish self, you know, they don't ever look back to see what they're leaving in their wake. They don't care. And I've run into people that I've said something to them in effect about, you know, about, well, don't you care about future generations? And they'll bold-faced tell you right there, hell no, I don't give a crap. That's their problem. And I think that's where that awakening awareness past that individual ego self realizes, hey, we're one. And that consciousness continues, whether that conscious being in this vessel, this specific body, has, you know, the temporal aspect of it. So this temporal existence has ended, but other conscious beings are here. And so that aspect of the troll nature, they don't care. They can't see past that ego self. So I do see a correlation. I do see a correlation, but I've got to get my story. I'm trying to distill it down, and that's really what these notes are about. I'm trying to distill it down right to that focal point of the old man looking at his notes through tired eyes. The old man stared at his notes through tired eyes. The old man looked down at his notes through tired eyes. The old man stared at his notes through tired eyes. And that's the focal point that I'm trying to get this down to, because what I'm really trying to distill down here is that's my entry point. You know, I'm going to start with the old man. I mean, that's what I'm kind of thinking. I'm going to start with the old man who is, who's, okay, so he's waning. The sun is setting, and he's fully aware of that. And so from his perspective, he wants to share and disseminate as much as possible about the exalted state, about the true, about the unclaimed inheritance and lost treasures. See, that's what it is. And, you know, I remember early on, I talked about bridging the mysticism, about bridging mysticism with pragmatism. So it's one thing to become aware, but it's another thing to live in the practice, to practice it. So knowing is of potential value. That's the mysticism of it. And that is the potential value of it. But the truer actual value is an application only. That's the practical, that's the pragmatic, that's the pragmatism, that's the practice. And see, that's what, you know, sometimes when I've talked to Kyle and shared, you know, we share some thoughts and ideas with each other, and that was one of the things that I was trying to share with him, that I don't limit the different expressions of how that practice can manifest itself. Now, could I expand my practice, and could it take on more width and breadth and depth? I don't see how the answer to that could be anything but yes. And I hope to grow in it till the day I draw my last breath. And I think at this point I have some that I can learn from my own son. I think in a certain aspect, a certain path, he has pursued it in a direction that's beyond the scope of what I have pursued. So, I mean, I think that's true of everyone. Our daughter, I mean, when I get to talk to her at times when we have meaningful conversations, you know, I can hear it, that she has the light in her. And of course, my wife, you know, yeah, she's always been there for me to keep me true, my compass, so to speak. Well, you know, some people would say true north, but the friendship, the companionship, couldn't have done it without her. Or if I could have, I don't know if I could have. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is, I think a lot of what we, you know, I remember years ago I ran across the definition of argue, and it means to render clear. And I've said this many times with people that I speak to, that when sometimes, not always, but sometimes when it seems or appears that we differ, I think it's semantics. I think we may be talking, we may be approaching the same truth, the same principle, but we have different labels. And perhaps even more compounding, we have different approaches. You know, I've kind of tried to say that to Kyle many times by repeating to him the concept, everything that rises must converge. So in that respect, I would like to think, I hope, that we are converging, but we may be approaching from different aspects, and we may be to stand and point, but there's the token, there's the call, the law of calling and the law of crossing. We may be calling it something different. We may have labeled it something different. But as we rise, as that exaltation takes place, those points converge. And so in the end, those labels, you know, how did Kyle say that earlier today? Oh, I can't think of what he said now. Anyway, it, to me, it's the way I had said it was union, union, something, and then reunion. What was the something? Oh, that's what he said. It was from nothing to something to nothing. You see, so that diversity that seems to separate us ends in commonality. It ends in convergence. So, oh, that's what it was. It was union, divergence, and then reunion. So, I mean, it's how I say my prayers, you know, to sojourn the narrow path that leads home to reunion with you and your kingdom. I mean, that's, I mean, again, I mean, I just, I have to find my way to clearly and concisely disseminate what I have come to know. My little thimbleful as an individual, as an awakened, what I would like to think is an awakened entity at whatever level I've achieved that in my lifetime so far. But anyway, part of this, you know, again, is not, it's about putting it out on the play field. You know, I have withheld this for the purpose of a maturity and a holistic approach to be as complete as possible. But the time, I'm at that time. So it's just a matter of getting out there and getting it done. That's all for now. Signing off.